something for the weekend. Do you know what, guys? I never ever thought in a million years I'd be calling Eddie Reader. Good morning, Eddie. How are you doing?
Good morning to you. Come out of hat as they say here in the Gaelic.
Do you know, because I have such a big memory from being 7 years of age. I just made my communion, okay? We went to a restaurant in Dublin on O'Connell Street called Flanagan's Restaurant. I still remember the day so clearly because in the background in the restaurant, they were playing Fairground Attraction. Perfect. And the whole gag for the whole meal was that our meal has got to be perfect. And anytime I hear your song, it just brings me back to that day. So
to the time you married Jesus.
Yes,
as a child.
That's it. I made a lot of money that day as well. But it's funny though, the way music takes you back. So I was really shocked to get in my email this week, Eddie Reader announces 40 years live concert tour.
I know. But see, I'm including the years where I was busking.
Well, you were a nobody.
I'm not including that. So you're all right. That's only 30 years. But
yeah.
But the rest of it is 10 years before that. I was out, not very much older than yourself, maybe about 10 years. And I was on the streets with my pals playing music in France and Europe, and started here, of course, in Glasgow in Sucky Hall Street. And I made free money for singing a song. So that started me. Really?
Are you making much now, Eddie? Or was it kind of like you were working your bum off all day long for like a quid or something?
Oh, it just not. No, I was quid. It was like 1 hour, and I mean, at the time, the dole money was about 27 quid. And I think that 1 hour, I'll never forget it. I wrote a song about it called Glasgow Star. But there was a moment where I looked down and my guitar case was just so full of money. I was counting it like one of the misers all in piles back at the flat with my flatmates who were trainee doctors, Susan and Jean. And Susan and Jean were marvelling at the size of the piles of money. And I think there was about 50 quid in an hour. So it wasn't that bad, you know.
Gosh.
And when I told my dad that, he was like, oh, maybe there's something in this game.
I know, yeah, because originally they're like, be a doctor like your mates, but then when they see the money rolling in, they're like, but it's funny, I don't think I've spoken to a single artist on the show who hasn't started off like that, on the dole, not able to pay their rent, absolutely broke, and then they just get this break. Something happens where they get spotted or they're asked to go on a tour. So how did it happen for you?
Well, I did those years busking, and I went to I sort of graduated to going to Europe, France, Paris, south of France, down with my friends. You know, they were all guitar playing hippies, just like me, and it was in the height of punk rock, and everything was a wee bit aggressive. So I was kind of looking to get away from Margaret Thatcher, and she was in power, and we just all went to the south of France. And then I came back about 2 years later, and my friend said to me, what you should do is answer adverts in the music press, but don't answer the adverts that aren't in a box, because they've got no money. You have to answer the adverts with people that have a box around their advert.
Oh,
because that
ad costs more to place.
Yeah,
that means they've got money,
money. So they must be somebody that at least could give you a wage. So there was two that week, I remember doing that, getting that advice, and there was two. Of course, I had come home, and it was Christmas time, and I got a job. There was like 3 million unemployed, and I got a job in my sister's knitwear factory. So I was kind of, oh, right, okay, this is, maybe I'll be stuck here for the rest of my days. But I answered the advert, and there was two. One was for Shack Attack, and one was for a punk band called The Gang of Four. And I adored The Gang of Four. And the first gig they were doing was the Old Grey Whistle Test, which is a TV program here that was very famous. And then they were going on an American tour and a British tour, and they were going to, the first gig was in California at the Uz Festival, 60,000 people with The Police and Lords of the New Church and the English Beat, they called them the London Beat. Uh-huh. And I was on a plane for the first time, and it was only then that I admitted to the Gang of Four when I got the job.
Oh my God. Not daunting at all.
I had never
then.
Done anything. I'd only been busking before that. I'd kind of lied in the telephone. I'd said, do you know what? I'd sung with Van Morrison and the Simple Minds. I mean, I didn't add the fact that I just sung along to them on the radio.
On the radio. Brilliant.
I felt so guilty about it. We're flying over Greenland and I'm...
Yeah, we're no more feeling guilty. Would you stop feeling guilty about it going on tour?
I was feeling a little guilty. I was just feeling a little guilty because I thought, these guys think I know what I'm doing. And because I was quite good, you know, I was kind of quick on the old harmony and all that. And I could reach any note that I wanted. And I had the piano keys in my throat, if you know what I mean. And so I could kind of do the gig really easily, better than them, because they were always the only thing that mattered to them was that I could drink them under the table, which, being my, you know, shipyard worker daughter, I was able to quite easily, you know, fake Glasgow. I was very good at that, but I could party hard, and I could also just keep singing till 4 a.m, which is kind of, those were the days, my friend.
Yeah. We thought they'd know. Now that you've admitted to that, Eddie, I don't know whether to believe the notes in your press release here that you were a backing singer for Eurythmics. Was that true, or did you make that up as well?
Yeah, I got that job. I got that job afterwards. I mean, after I got the job with the Gang of Four and went on tour, I came back, the tour had finished, and I was sleeping on someone's floor in London, and I think Annie Lennox had seen me. I used to sing with other people, you know, like I'd go to a gig and there'd be somebody, a bass playing friend of a friend of a friend, and I'd say, oh, can I get up? Can I sing with you? I ended up doing like backing singing for the support bands and things like that. You know, for example, in America, the Gang of Four were supported by REM, so before REM got really big, I would be going to their gigs when they came to London, and I'd be jumping up with them, or there'd be other bands. You know, there was other bands that didn't do anything that I ended up singing backing vocals for on the top of a, you know, it'd be a gig in London, and I'd just get up because they know me through someone who knows me. Yeah. And another guy, Anthony Thistlethwaite from the Waterboys, of course, me and him were quite sweet with one another, and he used to take me around some of the gigs, and he got me singing on the big music with Waterboys. So from there, Annie Lennox had heard of me, and she heard that I was kind of like fast and good with my vocalising, and she just said to Dave, go get her, find that girl. And they found me sleeping on a bass playing girl. I was in a girl band as well, so I had lots of little, you know, eggs in every basket. I was sleeping on this girl's floor, Erica. I came home one day from going out to an audition, or I'd make a demo tape and I'd go to the record companies and chat the doors and never get in. And she said to me, oh, this guy called Dave Stewart phoned. I couldn't pronounce the name of the band. It was something Yari Mani Biscuits or something.
Stop it.
Yari Biscuits.
Oh, that's brilliant. So would you have been pally then with a lot of the singers that were out at the time? Because Kim Wilde has started doing a show here on our radio station every evening. She does an 80s show. So would you have have been pally with people, or did you kind of like...
No, they were all stars to me.
They were stars to you?
They would have been like, you know, especially Kim. Kim had already made it when I was still busking on the streets, or I'd be listening to her on the radio and in the knitwear factory. But so all those people were kind of, they were the high hegians, we used to call them. So they were the high hegians, and they were the ones that had all the goodies and could get you the tours. So the biggest gig you could get would be Sting, like if you were singing backing vocals to Sting or mm-hmm. something like that. So I was kind of in that, in the echelons. I was in the lair that was all the lassies like me who were all trying to get that gig with Sting. And that was kind of a closed shop. But by the time I did the Eurythmics and then Alison Moyet and the Waterboys and Billy McKenzie and people like that, once I'd done all that, I started to get a little bored, and I kind of wanted to sing songs. Like, I was in love with Edith Piaf and, you know, the old singers. I love Maria Callas, and I love, you know, Janis Joplin. All the females that I really admired had all these amazing emotional outputs for their work. And I think I was longing for that. So I sent a prayer up and did a lot of fasting at that time, I remember. And I got, Martin Evan was one of the writers that I met at that time. And he wrote me a couple of songs, and I fell in love with them. And I thought, this is where I'm going. And I wrote to him and said, look, I think we could work together. And he came back from wherever he was, and he had another five songs. And then it just became the demo that I made for, which eventually became First of a Million Kisses.
Fairground
Attraction. And actually, Perfect was just to cheer us all up, because all the songs were, I was so interested in singing songs that were emotionally poignant, about lost love, or, you know, a prostitute being murdered by her pimp. But it was all in the kind of finding jewellery in the junk shop of life, you know, finding diamonds and in the council estate.
It's so funny, Eddie, because you see, I had no idea what any of these songs were about. You know the way you just sang along to the lyrics, but you didn't have a clue. But I do know it was May 1988, and that was on the radio all the time. All the time.
Yeah, well, it was funny because, in the fact, Perfect was used by us as something to cheer everybody up kind of thing. And as soon as I heard it, I thought, that is for me, that song. And I was a bit of a perfectionist. I was a wee bit snooty about my music, and I was a bit like, you know, singing has to be, you know, it has to be Ella Fitzgerald or forget it. You know, and if you weren't as good as Ella, yeah, I didn't give you any respect. You know what I mean? I wasn't very enamoured by any of the pop stardom. I wanted the music to be brilliant. And when I heard Perfect, I heard Elvis. I just heard something that harked back to an era that I admired at the time, which is all about singing powerfully and beautifully, but without inane lyrics. I wanted something that was chunky and meaty. I had meat on its bones, if you know what I mean. And I think Perfect did that for me.
It did.
And then when we played it, I was so in love with it. We wrote to a man who did an advert for British Airways. And I think he's passed away now, but I wrote to him and I said, I've just seen your advert for British Airways and I love it. This is our new demo. And it was, it's got to be Perfect. And I just think you'd be the man to make the video. And we haven't got any money, but would you do it for us? And we'll pay you later kind of thing if it's a hit. So this guy got a crew together and put us on the barge on the canal and made the video for Perfect. It went to number one in about 27 different countries.
You know what we've established here in this interview, Eddie? You are a complete and utter chancer, and it's got you places, and I admire
that.
Listen
to me. Absolutely. I think you have to take chances.
You have to
take chances on your instinct.
You have
to say to yourself, I'm going to go for it just to see what it feels like. But when you've got nothing to lose, as Bob Dylan says.
So, Eddie, you've announced your 40 years live concert tour. You're going to be all over Ireland in February 2022. Can you leave us, though, with, because I love your accent so much, would you say he was a wonky donkey for me?
He was a wonky donkey? What does it mean?
You have to Google that now. Go away from this interview. Google that and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, it's because your Scottish accent.
He was a wonky donkey.
Actually, right? If you say for me, he was a winky wonky wonky donkey. He was a wink. I'm going to say the wrong word now. He was a dinky winky wonky donkey.
He was a dinky winky wonky donkey.
Oh, you see, I could talk to you all day. Eddie, it's been absolutely brilliant. Thanks so much. Going to see you in Ireland. Coming to a place near you, February 2022.
A winky wonky donkey.
Thanks for those memories from the communion days back in 1988.
Oh, God bless you. I'm sorry for your loss.
Thanks, Eddie. Talk to you soon. It's Something for the Weekend on Ireland's Classic Hits.